The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Good evening, everyone. Although this week's Parashas, Parashas Vayikra, and also Shabbos is Shabbos Zohar, I'm going to take the liberty to deviate from the Sedra and speak on another topic which is very worthy to speak about and to study. And I have the opportunity didn't present itself until now. And that is the recent phenomenal tragedy that took place in the world, which is popularly known as the tsunami. Firstly, let's see exactly what happened. What were its physical causes, its ferocity? I don't have the latest reports, but I do have an encyclopedic report from February, which is about a month old. I must thank my son, Aaron Goldfein, for providing me with this report. The 2004 Indian Ocean earthquake actually was not a tsunami. The tsunami was created and accelerated by an earthquake. The 2004 Indian Ocean earthquake was an undersea earthquake that occurred at 7:58 a.m. local time on December 26, 2004. The earthquake generated a tsunami that was among the deadliest disasters in modern history. At a magnitude of 9.0, it was the largest earthquake since the 9.2 magnitude Good Friday earthquake off Alaska in 1964 and tied for the fourth largest since 1900. In February 2005, that's when this report came out last month, new analysis suggested the magnitude was underestimated. And one study estimates it at 9.3, which would make it one of the, perhaps the largest earthquake in history, in recorded history. However, the United States Geological Survey has not yet confirmed this. The earthquake originated in the Indian Ocean just north of Samuli Island, off the western coast of northern Sumatra, Indonesia. The resulting tsunami devastated the shores of Indonesia, Sri Lanka, South India, Thailand, and other countries with waves up to 30 meters, which is 100 feet high. It caused serious damage and deaths as far as the east coast of Africa, with the furthest recorded death due to the tsunami occurring at Port Elizabeth in South Africa, 8,000 kilometers or 5,000 miles away from the epicenter. Anywhere from 200 to 228,000 to 310,000 people are thought to have died as a result of the tsunami, and the count is not yet complete. In Indonesia in particular, 500 bodies a day were still being found in February 2005, and the count was expected to continue past June. The true final toll may never be known, due to bodies having been swept out to sea, but current estimates use conservative methodologies. Relief agencies warn of the possibilities of more deaths to come as a result of epidemics caused by poor sanitation. But the threat of starvation seems now to have been largely averted. The plight of many affected people and countries prompted a widespread humanitarian response. And we had in our community here in South Africa and spurred on by the Jewish community an enormous humanitarian response. The earthquake, The earthquake was unusually large in geographical extent. An estimated 1,200 kilometers, 750 miles, of fault line slipped about 15 meters, 50 feet, along the subduction zone where the India plate dives under the Burma plate. That means that the earthquake stretched for 1,200 kilometers, and so did the tsunami. The slip did not, its source, the slip did not happen instantaneously, but took place in two phases over a period of several minutes. The data indicate that the first phase involved the formation of a rupture of about 400 kilometers long and 100 kilometers wide, located 30 kilometers beneath the seabed. The rupture proceeded at a speed of about 2 kilometers per second, beginning off the coast of Attachi and proceeding northwesterly over about 100 seconds. A pause of another 100 seconds took place before the rupture continued northwards towards the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. So it happened with enormous speed. As well as the sideways movement between the plates, the seabed is estimated to have risen by several meters. This was the earth below the sea, triggering devastating tsunami waves. That means if the seabed rises and you have water, the water that was occupying that space does not have that space anymore in which to occupy. So the water shoots up. And if that goes over an area of 1,200 kilometers with enormous force, then you get the tsunami. The waves did not originate from a point source, as mistakenly depicted in some illustrations of their spread. In other words, the waves didn't come from one pinpoint source, but radiated outwards along the entire 1,200 kilometers length of the rupture. This greatly increased the geographical area over which the waves were observed, reaching as far as Mexico and Chile. Numerous aftershocks were reported off the Andaman Islands, the Nicobar Islands, and the region of the original epicenter in the hours and days that followed. The largest aftershock was 7.1 off the Nicobar Islands. Other aftershocks up to a magnitude of 6.6 continued to shake the region on a daily basis. What was the power of the earthquake? The total energy released by the earthquake in the Indian Ocean has been estimated as an equivalent. They have the scientific measure here, but it is the equivalent, which is enough to boil 150 liters or 40 US gallons of water for every person on Earth. Again, the energy released by the earthquake, not by the tsunami, by the earthquake, was an equivalent to boil 150 liters of water for every person on Earth. It is estimated to have resulted in an escalation of the Earth's surface of about 20 to 30 centimeters, equivalent to the effect of the tidal forces caused by the sun and the moon. The shock waves of the earthquake were felt across the planet, as far as Oklahoma. Vertical movements of 3 millimeters were recorded. The shift of mass and the massive release of energy very slightly altered the Earth's rotation. The exact amount is yet undetermined, but theoretical models suggest the earthquake shortened the length of a day by 2.68 microseconds. Explain astronomically why. It also caused the Earth to minutely wobble. In other words, shook the whole Earth. To minutely wobble on its axis by up to 2.5 centimeters, or the equivalent of 1 inch. And it gives in what direction. Then it explains astronomically that time that was shortened will be made up. More spectacularly, there was a 10-meter movement laterally and 4 to 5 meters vertically along the fault line. Early speculation was that some of the smaller islands southwest of Sumatra may have moved. Some of the actual islands may have moved southwest by up to 20 meters or 66 feet. There were also calculations that the northern tip of Sumatra, which is on the Burma plate, may have moved up to 36 meters, 118 feet southwest. All right, now they're measuring it, but they're not sure yet. Since movement was both vertical as well as lateral, some coastal areas may now be below sea level. And they're still doing scientific tests into this. What are the characteristics of a tsunami? The sudden vertical rise of the seabed by several meters during the earthquake displaced massive volumes of water, resulting in a tsunami that struck the coast of the Indian Ocean. A tsunami which causes damage far away from its source is sometimes called a teletsunami, and is much more likely to be produced by vertical motion of the seabed than by horizontal motion. The tsunami, like all others, behaved very differently in deep water than in shallow water. In deep ocean water, tsunami waves form only a small hump, barely noticeable and harmless, which travels at very high speed of 500 to 1,000 kilometers an hour. That's about double the speed of a jumbo jet, if not more than double the speed. In shallow water, near coastlines, a tsunami slows down to only tens of kilometers an hour, but in doing so forms large destructive waves. Scientists investigating the damage in Ateche found evidence that the wave reached a height of 80 feet when coming ashore along large stretches of the coastline, rising to 100 feet in some areas when traveling inland. According to Tad Murthy, Vice President of the Tsunami Society, the total energy of the tsunami waves, originally they said that the energy of the tsunami waves were equivalent of the bombs dropped in Hiroshima. And to me that sounded not right. Here it says a little differently. The total energy of the tsunami waves was about 5 megatons of TNT. This is more than twice the total explosive energy used during all of World War II, including the 2 atomic bombs. In other words, all of the explosive energy used by all of the armies during all of the years of World War II, including the 2 atomic bombs that were dropped in Hiroshima, equals maybe one half of the explosive energy that the tsunami had. We want to see the Gvuras Hashem, the strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But still, that's a couple of orders of magnitude less than the energy released by the earthquake itself. In many places, the waves reached as far as 2 kilometers, which is 1.25 miles inland. Because the 1,200-kilometer of fault line affected by the quake was in a nearly north-south orientation, the greatest strength of the tsunami waves was in an east-west direction. Bangladesh, which lies at the northern end of the Bay of Bengal, had very few casualties despite being a low-lying country. Coasts that have landmass between them. Now, when something like this happens, if you're nearby, it's quite risky. If you're far away, we would assume it's safer. Not so. Coasts that have a landmass between them, many said that if there's a landmass, then it blocks the tsunami. Coasts that have a landmass between them and the tsunami's location of origin are usually safe. However, tsunami waves can sometimes diffract around such landmasses. Thus, the Indian state of Kerala was hit by the tsunami despite being on the western coast of India, which was, they had the the mass last of India blocking, and the western coast of Sri Lanka also suffered substantial impacts. What happens if you're very, very far away? Also, distance alone is no guarantee of safety. Somalia was hit harder than Bangladesh, despite being much further away. Due to distances involved, the tsunami took anywhere from 15 minutes to 7 hours, which was for Somalia in northern Africa, to reach the various coastlines. The northern regions of the Indonesian island of Sumatra were hit very quickly, while Sri Lanka and the east coast of India were hit roughly 90 minutes to 2 hours later. Thailand was also struck about 2 hours later, despite being closer to the epicenter, because the tsunami traveled more slowly in the shallow dam and sea off the west coast. The tsunami was noticed as far as Strusbay in South Africa, some 8,500 kilometers, or 5,300 miles away. So distance is of very little significance, 8,000 kilometers, where a 1.5 meter high tide surged on shore about 16 hours after the quake. The spot at the southernmost point of Africa took a relatively long time to reach, probably due to the broad continental shelf of South Africa and the fact that the tsunami would have followed the South African coast from east to west. Some of the tsunami's energy escaped into the Pacific Ocean, where it produced small but measurable tsunamis along the western coast of North and South America. Despite a lag of up to several hours between the earthquake and the impact of the tsunami, nearly all of the victims were taken completely by surprise. There were no tsunami warning systems in the Indian Ocean to detect tsunamis, and equally important, warn the general populace living around the ocean quickly. Tsunami detection is not easy because while tsunami is in deep water, there's a very low height and a network of sensors is needed to detect it. The first warning signs of a possible tsunami is the earthquake itself. However, tsunamis can strike thousands of miles away from where the earthquake is only felt weakly or not at all. Also, in the minutes preceding a tsunami strike, the sea often recedes temporarily from the coast. People in the Pacific regions are more familiar with tsunamis and often recognize this phenomenon as a sign to head for higher ground. However, around the Indian Ocean, this rare sight reportedly induced people, especially children, to visit the coast to investigate and collect stranded fish on as much as 2.5 kilometers of exposed beach, with fatal results. One of the few coastal areas to evacuate ahead of the tsunami was on the Indonesian island of Simuliu, very close to the epicenter. Island folklore recounted an earthquake and tsunami in 1907, and the islanders fled to the inland hills after the initial shaking before the tsunami struck. On Maikeo Beach in northern Phuket, Thailand, a 10-year-old British girl named Tilly Smith had studied tsunamis in geography class at school and recognized the warning sign of the receding ocean. She and her parents warned others on the beach, which was evacuated safely. The reported death toll from the earthquake, the tsunami, and the resultant floods varies widely due to the confusion and conflicting reports, but could total over 235,000 people, with tens of thousands of people reported missing and over 1 million left homeless. Relief agencies report that 1/3 of the dead appear to be children. This is a result of the high proportion of children in the populations of many of the affected regions and the fact that the children were the least able to resist being overcome by surging waters. In addition to the large number of local residents, up to 9,000 foreign tourists, mostly Europeans, enjoying the peak holiday travel season were among the dead or the missing, especially Scandinavians. The European nation hit hardest may have been Sweden, which reported more than 60 dead and as many as 1,300 missing. We had fatalities from South Africa and even from the Jewish community. States of emergency were declared in Sri Lanka, Indonesia, and the Maldives. The United Nations has declared that the current relief operation will be the costliest ever. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has stated that the reconstruction will probably take between 5 and 10 years. The devastation was to the people, to the environment, to the infrastructure, to the industries, and so forth. Even all of the water systems, and so on. Governments and NGOs fear the final death toll may double as a result of diseases, prompting a massive humanitarian response. Measured in lives lost, this is one of the 10 worst earthquakes in history. It is also the single worst tsunami in history, measured by lives lost. The previous record was the 1703 tsunami at a certain place, Awa, Japan, that killed over 100,000 people. The 2004 earthquake and tsunami seems to be the worst natural disaster since either the 1976 Tangshan earthquake or the 1970 Boalao cyclone, or can conceivably exceed both of these. Due to uncertainty over death tolls, it might never be known for sure which of these natural disasters was the deadliest. There's a lot more information here, but we do not have time to go into it all. But here they have a short paragraph on the spiritual and psychological impact. Many health professionals and aid workers are reporting widespread psychological trauma associated with the tsunami, and many sightings of ghosts have been reported, particularly those of foreigners. Traditional beliefs in many of the affected regions state that a relative of the family must bury the body of the dead or the ghost will return. Some psychologists interpret this as evidence of psychological trauma. Some religious groups asserted that the tsunami was God's punishment for sex tourism and other sinful activities in Southeast Asia. But this attracted considerable controversy and opposition. See scandal provoked by the conservative Moroccan newspaper, the Ajadad. In any case, the hardest hit area, Ataceh, is considered to be a religiously conservative Islamic society and had no tourism or Western presence at all in recent years due to armed conflict between the Indonesian military and the Achanese separatists. I think this gives us a little background into what took place. Now, how should one view this phenomenon? What is to be learned from this? And how is a Jew to react to this? Now, naturally, we must show the utmost compassion and assistance. Kederach b'nei Yisrael, that they are rachmonim, rachmonim and gemle chasodim. Klal Yisrael is known for its compassion. It's known for its chesed, its charity and chesed. It states that Achzorius is only found amongst the nations of the world, not amongst Israel. So that's opgeret, that's for sure. But what should be our viewpoint into this enormous phenomena that took place? There are two visions, two viewpoints coming from opposite sources. You have the viewpoint of the Kefir Vashem, he who denies the existence or the supervision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. And then you have the viewpoint of the Maimon Vashem, he who believes in the Yad Hashem, the hand of the Almighty. The viewpoint of the Kefir, of the one who disbelieves, to him, this was a scientific phenomenon. Natural course of events that are bound to take place from time to time. You just have to hope that you're at the right place at the right time and not at the wrong place at the wrong time. It's a natural phenomenon caused by faults in the Earth's plates. Like the entire world, that the entire world, what happens in the world. The fact is, even the creation and the order of the world is random and coincidental. I mean, we have Darwin's theory of evolution. And there's no hand of the Almighty in this. And there's no hand. There's no hand of the Almighty in this, and there's no Almighty. This is the Hashkofa, this is the viewpoint of the Kefir Bashem. The Archazal sages refer to the Kefir Bashem as the Rosho, Nagod Shel Pesach. Rosho Mahu Eimer. What does the Rosho say? Mo Haveda Hazeh Lochem. What is all of this doing? What does it have to do to you? What does it mean for you? Why do the Chazal refer to him as a Rosho? Refer to him as a Tipish? It's nonsense that he's not so clever. Why a Rosho? Why an evil man? The answer to that is he could be very clever. Doesn't have to be a tipish. But kol kavanosoi is leilishake melalarshia. His intentions are not for the sake of wisdom, and his intentions are not in the pursuit of truth and wisdom. But he has an agenda for evil. And that's why the sages view the kafir, he who denies the existence of the Almighty when it comes to the world, as a Rosho. Why should we say that? Why is he viewed that he has an agenda for evil? It's very simple. I'll give you an example. Sages tell us, im kol chachmei aderes, if all the wisest men who lived throughout all of the generations of the world, take your wisest philosophers, scientists, doctors, mathematicians, engineers, architects, you name them, bring them all together, bring them all together in one massive mass university, holy world conference, but not merely from this generation, from all of the generations of the world, and ask them if they will please create for us Namola Achas, one ant. And they will fail to do so. With all of the greatest brains of the world, and in Yesh Chochma, Bagoyim Tami, Kodesh Baruch Hu's Torah tells us there's great wisdom amongst the nations of the world. Harea, Chochom Echach Meumais, Chayv Levorech. When you see the wise of the nations, you have to make a barocha. Asher Nosan, Mechoch Mosa Lebosev Adoma, Kodesh Baruch Hu has given from his wisdom to human beings. Why haven't they been able to create with all of that wisdom? They've created electricity, they've created telephones, they've gone to the moon, they're going to Mars, they've gone to Mars, they're going to other places. Why not one ant? No, I can't. How many ants are there in the world? Are there 100 ants? 1,000 ants? 10,000 ants? Are there a million ants? Are there millions upon millions of ants? And how many insects are there in the world? Are there 10 species of insects? There are probably hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of species of ants. Yet we're talking of hundreds of thousands of species of insects. And one ant they can create, just one. I'm not asking for a rocket to go to the moon? One little ant that we step on all the time, that's a nuisance. And not only they can't create it, they can't understand the wisdom of the ant. If they could, then they would might be able to create it. But why? And this world is full of only ants. What about reptiles? And what about animals? If you can't understand an ant, you're not going to be able to understand a reptile or an animal or a lion or an elephant or a whale. And how many species of animals are there? They don't even know how many species of animals there are in the sea. They're still finding out. And how many thousands upon thousands of wondrous animals and birds and fish there are in the world. And what about man? Man, the sages tell us, is an olam koton. He encompasses the entire world. If you don't understand an ant, how are you going to understand the heart of man or the brain of man? There was once a story not long ago in the Israeli press, which made history, that the Israeli scientists that are second to none in the world were able to create a few inches of an artificial skin. Of course, it wasn't like the regular skin, but a few inches of artificial skin. Why was it such an important breakthrough? Because Leolenu, because of all of the terrorists and war, there's, you know, people sustain great and very serious burns, and they could replace that skin. And they were working on getting it to grow and so forth. But what about the kidneys and the heart and the brain of man? And then what about the heavens? You have a star. And a star, reportedly, by the greatest scientists of the nations of the world, is far greater than our, far larger than our Earth. And how many stars are there? There are billions of galaxies, according to the latest reports, scientific reports in astronomy. Billions upon billions. Billions of galaxies. And each galaxy has billion stars. And each one is larger than our Earth. Now, where did all this come from? By itself. Random. Coincidence. And each star that's up there works under such precision that they can shoot off a rocket from here that'll take months to rendezvous, because they know according to the precision it'll be exactly at that place. All of them work in such precision. How did all of this happen? Now you see why our Chazal called the Kefir a Rosho. Because his agenda is for evil. He's not interested in pursuit of truth and pursuit of wisdom. And he's trying to say that the world just developed itself, came about on its own. It's a matter of course, a matter of happenings. Let me ask you another question. I believe this question, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky poses in the Sefer Gesher HaChaim. He says, if you take a bottle of ink, how many times will you have to throw it against the wall in order that finally will be printed on the wall a book of Shakespeare? 10 times? 20 times? 100 times? 1,000 times? How many? How many times will you have to take containers of paint and at random throw them against the wall to produce a Rembrandt. 10 times, 20 times, 100 times. A book of Shakespeare with all of its wisdom and a Rembrandt with all of its wisdom does not have the wisdom of one ant. And here you're saying that this great world of ours evolved by chance over millions and millions of years. Is this not atypicious? Could there be a greater stupidity, a nonsense? If I would tell this to a child in a nursery school, he or she would start to laugh and tell their mommy, look at the stories he's making up. And when a bone is found, or a tooth is found, that happens to be a few hundred years old, the evolutionists, the professors, declare a yontif. They make a suda shel mitzvah. One headline was written that Darwin must be smiling in his grave. And the scientists of the nations of the world themselves agree to this, that it's nonsense. The greatest. I'll give you quotes from two. According to the opinions of the mainstream of scientists in the world, the greatest two scientists that we've had in the last 1,000 years were Sir Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein. Sir Isaac Newton said, there is no doubt that there is a supreme creator and there is a supreme master of the world. It is impossible to say otherwise. And the more I delved into it, and he created, he delved into some of the greatest wisdoms of the nature that was possible. Einstein built his theories on his shoulders. And he says, the more I study and the more I study, I start to scratch the surface to understand that there is a supreme master that created this entire world and that guides it in perfect order. And when they asked him, how much of the universe do you understand now? He said, I'll give you an example. I'm like a little boy that's standing by the great ocean, throwing stones into the ocean. Does he understand the ocean, or is he merely playing? He says, that's what I understand of the universe, of the wisdom of the Maker. This was a goy, a non-Jew. And Albert Einstein, when they asked him, with all of the great breakthroughs that we're able to make to understand the heavens, to understand the celestial beings, what achievements, what advances have we come to? He said, I'll explain it to you. Before, we were like looking at the universe from our lounge window. And now, with all of advances of mankind, we are looking at the universe by going up and standing on the roof of the house. Those are the advances we have made to try to understand some of the great wisdom that is in the universe of the world. This is the vision of the Kafer, Rosha Mahu Aimer. So this was a scientific phenomena. What is the Ashkofa? What is the viewpoint of the Maimin, of the believer? And that is a Rambam. The Rambam says, right at the beginning of his great works, of the Yad Chazaka, Yesod HaYesodis V'Amud HaChochmas, the pillar of all pillars, the foundation of all wisdoms, Leida Sheyesham Motzui Rishayin, to know that there was a supreme being always in existence, V'Humamtzi Kol Nimtzo, and everything that is found in the world today is from him. Everything that exists only because of him. And if a person would think that he could vanish, then everything would vanish. And if a person could think that everything would vanish, he would remain. Leivatel who lived too long. Shikola nimzoim srichin lai, vuhu boruchu einatzorich lehem, veleile echod mehem. Lefichoch ena mitoseka mitos echod mehem. And this is what the Novi, this is what the prophet means when he said, Ma'ashem elekim emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only truth in the world. What does it mean? He's the only truth. He is the only independent truth which leans or relies on nothing, while everything else in the world must be supported by him. Hu levado emes, v'ein la'acher emes kamitosei. And this is what the Torah means, ein od milvadai. Kleimar, there is no one besides him, ein shom mit motzui emes milvadai kemeisoi. There is no other existence in the world like him. Because we all take our lives and our energies and our existence from him, well, he takes it from no one. He's totally independent. Amotzi azeh hu elokei olam adon kol ha'aretz. This supreme being, who is he? This is the God of the universe. Hu hamanig, he supervises the entire world. He conducts the entire world. Hu hamanig ha'galgal, he turns the globe. B'keach she'ein le'keitz v'tachlis, with an energy and a strength that has no end to it. B'keach she'ein le'hefzik, with an energy and a strength that has no interruption. She'ha'galgal seviv tomid, because the globe is constantly turning, the universe is constantly turning. V'yef she'yosov b'leim esaviv. We're not children that could say that all of this happens by itself, like those tipshim. The Rambam says, how can you say all of this is happening by itself? He won't even entertain the thought. Uhu barachu mesavevesei. He turns it. But without a hand and without a body. V'yadiyas dovezeh mitzvis asei. And the knowledge of this, that a Jew is to know this, this is a mitzvah on a goy also, on a non-Jew also. It's a mitzvah asei, it's a positive commandment. Shnema anechi Hashem elakecho. I am the Lord your God. V'chol amal al daitesh yesham eloha acha chutz mizeh. And anyone who thinks that there is another force in the world that is independent of the Almighty, eva b'leis aseh, transgresses a negative commandment, as it states, Lo yelecho elohim acherim al ponoi, you shall not recognize any other forces in my presence. Bekefer beikar, shezehu ha'ikar ha'godol she'akol toliboy. And the sages refer to that type of person as a kefer beikar, where he denies the very root of the entire Torah, of entire belief, because everything is dependent on that. So this is the other viewpoint. This is the Chochem. The sages refer to this person as a Chochem Mahu Aymer. The wise person, what does he say? The sages have told us, have guided us. How should we deal with the kefir? Haki Yeshinov. Can't discuss with him. if he'd be interested in wisdom, if he would be interested in pursuing the truth, yes, by all means. But his agenda is that of evil. His interest is he will go to all extremes to free himself from the fact that there's an Almighty. Because if there's an Almighty, then he has to serve him. He wants to free himself from the conscience of the world. Then he's free to do what he pleases. Therefore, there's nothing to discuss with him. L'davenenu, though, but unfortunately, to we live in Western culture. And in Western culture, we're constantly bombarded with this. From all of the articles and all of the papers that were written under tsunami, how did it happen? Why did it happen? What caused what? Was there ever an article written? Why did God bring this? Yes, we saw a few lines there that came from the Eastern cultures, not from the Western cultures, because that has no place by the Rosho Mahu Aimer. Now, it's interesting to note that this is merely the premise of what to search for. The Chochem doesn't take anything at face value. The fact is, the Chochem in the Haggadah bombards you with questions. He says, Mo ha-chukim, v'ha-mishpotim, v'ha-edus. What is all of this? What are these statutes? What are these laws? What are these testimonies? What is all of this that you're doing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to do? He asks, and he must ask. The Kefir was not criticized for asking. The Kefir was criticized because he came with a fake complaint. He already made his conclusion. He took HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the picture. But the Chochem comes with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the picture, but he bombards you with questions and answers. Questions and kashas, and contradictions. And even the Tam that asks Mazos the simpleton, what is this? He's not criticized because he's asking. He's criticizing because he's not asking well. He's asking simply, what is this? You're supposed to ask like a Chochem. And the Einia de Alishol, the one that doesn't know to ask, he's criticized because he doesn't know to ask. He has eyes he doesn't see. He has ears he doesn't hear. What do our sages say? What are you supposed to answer the Chochem? It states that you're supposed to learn with him all of the laws, everything. If he asks and he wants to know, then he's searching, but he's searching for the Das Hashem, for the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not like the Kefir. Then you must teach him all of the knowledge of Hashem, all that you can teach him, and all that he can absorb. Now, so therefore, the vision and the attitude that one has to take, we asked, how should one look at something like this? He has to explore, he has to labor to try to understand. But with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the picture, why did this happen? What for? What does it mean for me? Maybe one will say that it's not so important for us to explore these things. After all, what does it have? It's not the Haggadah Shel Pesach is different. They were talking about the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the going out of Egypt, which is the foundation of all of our mitzvahs. They were talking about Pesum Miniso, to spread the miracle of the going out of Egypt. But when it comes to a tsunami, well, what kind of mitzvah is that? That's not so important for us to ask. And that's not so important for us to explore. Not so. The Rambam writes in firstly, in Yisodi HaTorah, in Perek Beis. He writes, what is the Jew's obligation in regards to viewing the entire natural world? He writes this right in the second chapter, after he explains that there is a supreme being in the world. The second chapter of his great works. This great God that we have, mitzvah la'avai u'liyira isai. It's a mitzvah to love him and to fear him. As it states, v'yo'after eis Hashem alakecho. You shall love the Lord your God, v'nemar as Hashem alakecho tira, you shall fear the Lord your God. Hei'aychi aderech la'avosai v'yirosai. How does a Jew come to love the Almighty? And how does a Jew come to fear the Almighty? When a person will give thought, he'll give effort and thought to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creations in the world, and his wondrous creations in the world, and his great creations. And he'll see unending wisdom in all of his creations. Miyad hu ohev u'mishabeach u'mefa'er u'mis'ave tavegdol leleida Hashem HaGodol. If he does this, immediately he will have not only a respect for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but a great love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And not only a great love, but an enormous desire to come closer to him and to learn more about the creator of these wondrous creations. Like David HaMelech said, my soul thirsts for this living God when I see his magnificent creation. And when he starts to give thought to this, and he compares himself to the gevura of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the strength and might of Hashem, miyad hu nirta lachurav, immediately he steps back. V'yifachid, and he trembles. V'yadeya shu birya ketano shvela, Afela emeres bedas kalemu eto lifnei tomim deos. And he realizes that he's like a small creation standing at the bottom of an enormous mountain. Kimei sho'oma David ki era shmecho ma'ase yatzbasecho ma'enosh ki siskareno. David HaMelech said, also when I see the works I see the heavens which you created with your fingers. Who am I? What am I? And then, through this, he will come to Yiras Hashem. So the Rambam brings, we have to see, we have to hear, but not enough to see and hear. It's not enough to read about something like this. Have your coffee, and then wait for the next big news to come along. Now, he said, Mishbainin, the Jew has to look, he has to listen, he has to see, and he has to labor. Mishbonin, he has to go into it with depths. Magodlo ma'asecha Hashem. Look at the great creation and the gvur of Hashem. That in a matter of seconds, enough energy was released that equaled twice the amount of all of the explosive energy released during the many years by all of the nations of the world in World War II in a few seconds. The earth itself shook. Who could make the earth shake? Darwin made the earth shake. Tippish. The earth shook. And Dovid HaMelech said, my Enosh, what is a man? But we see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do. This is Echodah. This is one thing. But secondly, the Rambam brings, at the beginning of Hilchos Tainus, he brings Mitzvah asei min haTorah lizay kularia bechatzetzreis al kol tzore shetove al atzibor. We're speaking here not only of a show of force, a show of wonder, a show of majesty. The oceans lifted up. In a matter of seconds, the earth split. Over an area of 12,000 kilometers. Or was it 1,200 kilometers? 1,200 kilometers. The waters lifted up. And traveling twice the speed of a jumbo jet went 8,000 kilometers across the world. This was the strength, the gevurah, and the majesty. But we're also speaking about a great tragedy. The Rambam says that when tragedies come to the world, he's referring to Israel. When they come to the world, to Israel, there's a positive commandment. This was a positive commandment during the time of the Beis Hamikdash to take out the chatzetzeres, to take out the trumpets and the shofars, and to blow them, al kol tzor shetove al atzibur, whether it was war, hatzor atzereschem, or whether it was dever, plague, or whether it was famine, or locusts, or whatever. Today we don't have the chatzetzeres, so the mitzvah is to, some places we take out the shofars, or to Begeza Tanesim, fast days. This is the mitzvah. So firstly we see, we cry as a reaction if a tzorah comes to Israel. We must react. But what is more important is the Rambam says, why? Why should we react? What, you think we blow the chatzetzeres, it's going to stop the locusts? What, the chatzetzeres, the trumpets will scare the locusts and they'll go away? What is the purpose of it? Or the shofars? We'll bring the rains. We don't believe in that. You go into Eastern cultures, they'll make noise, they'll beat the drums, and they'll say that'll bring the rains, and that'll scare the locusts, or whatever it might be. That's not. Why? The Rambam says why. Tovezeh midakei atshuva hu. Shebizman shetovei tzora v'yizaku aleho v'yoriya yedu hakol shebiglal ma'aseyem oroim heira lehem. Kikosev avaneseichem hitu eschem. Because when we will blow the chatzetzeres, the trumpets of the shayfres, or we will have fast days, this will bring home to everyone that it's not being caused by someone else. It's not being caused by mere random effects. It's been caused by us, by our deeds. We are the ones that are causing the locusts to come. We are the ones that have closed up the skies, that are because HaKadosh Baruch Hu closed the skies because of our deeds. And therefore, it'll bring people, v'zehu shi'igraim lo'aseh ha'tzor me'aleihem, and therefore it'll bring people to change their deeds. And if they change their deeds, then they will change, remove the cause of the plague. It's not the trumpets. It's not the shayfres. It will bring home to us what we are causing. And by changing our deeds, then we will rectify it. This is the reason why. Then the Rambam goes a step further. What happens if we ignore this? What happens if we do not react to it? We won't cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We won't bring out the chatzetzeres or the shayfres. We won't fast. But we'll say, no, what can you do? There are good seasons, there are bad seasons. The farmer's almanac. There's bound to be drought. Or it's a scientific phenomena. It says, Nikra Nikres. It's Darwin. What should we do? We have to carry on. He says, not only something like this lacks wisdom, lacks understanding. A person who talks like that, he doesn't know anything about the world. He's not talking like a Jew. After what the Rambam wrote in Perek Aleph. Yeah. But not only that, he's cruel. To say such a thing and to act such a way is cruelty. Because then they will carry on, the people will carry on with their same evil deeds. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have to bring more tzoros. This is what it states in the Torah by the rebukes. V'alachtem imi bikeri, v'alachti gam ani imochem b'chamas keri. If you will walk with me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, with this business of keri, keri means mikra nikra, it's random, then I also will walk like that with you. And I will bring on more. You want random effects? I'll bring more. So not only is it a lack of wisdom, not only is it people that have eyes but cannot see, like David HaMelech wrote and Moshe Rabbeinu wrote on the gods of the others. They have eyes, but they cannot see. They have ears, they do not hear. No, not only is it that, but it's cruelty, because then we carry on. Life, business as usual. We have to carry on. Watch what happens on television, have our coffee, and carry on. So what happens? Kodesh Baruch Hu has to bring another wake-up call. We are causing disasters. Not only are we rectifying problems, but we are bringing, heaven forbid, more disasters upon us. This is what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tainus. Maybe someone will say, though, what's that got to do with the tsunami? He's talking about a tzora that comes on Israel. It states a tzora comes on Israel. This is how we have to react. But on the tsunami, it's true. There were a few Jews involved. And every Jew is precious to us. That's a whole world. But it happened in another corner of the world, in the far-off Iye Hayom, the islands of the sea, other cultures. What's it have to do with us? Now, sir. Now, our Navim tell us not like that. Our prophets say differently. What do our prophets say? Our prophets say in Zephaniah, Per Gimel, Per Gimel, Posig Boven Zayin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Hichrati Goyim, Noshamu Pinosam. I bring destruction to the nations of the world. I destroy their great cities. Hechravti chutzosam, mibli eiver. I lay their cities to waste in desolation. Nitztu oreiha mibli ish me'en yoshev. The Jew will say, let it be there, as long as it's not here. Omati achtiri osi. The Novi said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, fear me, tikhe musa. Take musa from it. Learn from it. And Rashi brings, Hevesi peronies ala umes, kedeshe tirou, vitiru, kemeshu mesayim vehelech. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, when tragedy comes to the world, even far away, you, Yisrael, are to learn from it. Take Musar and rebuke from it. In order that I shall not withhold all of the goodness that I have for you. Ochein hishkimu. Hishchisu kol elilosam. And therefore learn and say, look what happened to them. We have to change our ways in order that it shouldn't happen to us. Now that's a chidush, because people always say, look what happened to them. They should change their ways. The Navi said, no, that's nonsense. Don't say, look what happened to them. They should change their ways. The Navi said, Hishkimu, he says, Ochein, Hishkimu, Hichishu kol elalosam. Look what happened to them, and therefore we have to change our ways. So heaven forbid it should not happen to us also. And Rashi brings this in Parshas Va'era. Parshas Va'era, By the Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim, by Meshe with Pare. What do we see from all of this? We see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man with five chushim, with eyes, with ears, with all of his senses, with the seichel, because he wanted him to see, he wanted him to hear, he wanted him to think. Chochem ma'aimer, what does the chochem say? What does he say? He bombards us with kashrus. He says, I don't understand this, I don't understand this, and I don't understand this. So what are you supposed to do? You don't tell him to keep quiet, and he's not a chochem. Says, sit down and learn with him. Teach him. He has to ask. We have to ask. We have to see. The Rambam says you won't come to Lev HaKadosh Baruch Hu unless you open your eyes and see the world he created. And you won't come to fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu unless you open your eyes and see the world he created. To see that in one ant is more wisdom than all of the wise men of the world since the world was created. They haven't been able to duplicate that yet. See the Gvuras Hashem, the wisdom of Hashem. David HaMelech consistently, Tzoma Nafshi, says, my soul thirsts for your great wisdom. And he has to see what's happening in the world. He has to see what's happening in Israel. And what happens in Israel, he has to say, this is a message. This is a sign for me. It's telling me something. Things are not in order. And when he sees it happen at the other end of the world, he has to say the same thing. Tikhu Musar, take Musar Tirosi, fear me, so it should not come on you. Change your ways. The Gemara in Kiddushin, Taf Lamed Gimel Seif Omer Aleph, Rabbi Yechanan Havakoi Mikame Sabi Da Armoi. The Gemara there is discussing that you have to stand up for a elderly Jew. States Rabbi Yechanan would stand up also for an elderly non-Jew. And when they asked him why, he said, Kama Araptiki Odu Alayhu. Pirish Rashi, Mikros Vitsores, Ro Nisim Harbe Umosim. Because someone who has lived many years, he has seen much sorrows, many miracles, many wonders. And therefore he has wisdom, and you must honor him. Now, who's seen miracles? Have you seen miracles? Have you seen wonders? There are miracles and wonders happening every instant. They have eyes and they don't see. Rabbi Yechanan stuck. He says, an old man, he has seen many things in his life. We're supposed to grow. We're supposed to grow from what we see and what we hear and what we learn all of the time. And therefore an older man has a world in him. He would give him honor. We're supposed to become wiser from everything. The Maral brings on the Mishnah, Eizu Achochom, Halemin Mikol Odom. Who is the wise person? Someone that learns from everyone? He says, why doesn't it say who is the wise person? Someone who has a lot of information in his head. No. That's someone who maybe has amassed some wisdom. But the wise are people that always want to pursue more wisdom and truth. Always. So what is the sign of someone who's always pursuing more wisdom, more truth? And the greatest truth is to know the knowledge of Hashem, that someone who learns from everyone and everything. I had a conversation not long ago on the telephone with a daughter from my Rebbe, Reb Gifter, with the Rebbetzin Shlomis Eisenberg. She told me that since her father died and she doesn't hear him talk anymore, she doesn't know what's going on in the world. She knew what was going on in the world from his shmuzim, from what he was, from his shurim, and from his conversations. Because he was being misbeinen, he was laboring, toiling to understand everything. Why are these things happening? What for? What can we learn from that? What can a Jew learn from it? How can he become a greater person from this? How can he know greater Das Hashem to understand the Creator? And therefore he was alert in everything. Read the newspaper every morning. Knew more what was going on in the world than anybody else in the yeshiva. Once told me that the Russian Empire is going to fall because they made a mistake. They went into Afghanistan. I didn't even know they went into Afghanistan. 5 years later, I'm talking to a Russian, and they had collapsed. And I asked him, why did they collapse? He says, they went into Afghanistan. That became their end. Now, there are those who might say, well, maybe good. This was a great phenomenon, a great tragedy. But there are plenty of tragedies in the world. There have been greater tragedies in the world. There was World War I. There was World War II. There was the Holocaust. Hitler and Stalin are held responsible for the estimated deaths of 50 million people. We're talking a million homeless, a couple of 100,000 people. It's dwarfed by those figures. Not only that, you have wars in Africa, wars in other places, you have starvation, you have diseases, and so on. Firstly, MS, true. But that doesn't mean that we're not supposed to learn from this tragedy. But secondly, there's something unique about this tragedy. This Eter Eshoim of the world can destroy the world. The wicked can destroy the world. This is not a chidush. This is nothing new. This we know. There was a Cain that killed Hevel. That was almost 50%. There was 50% of the world just about. There was a Parai. There was a Haman. There was a Hitler. This we know. That the human being has the ability to destroy the world. And even if it's not done through a human being, let's say a plague, a great flu epidemic, sickness. True. But still, it's very common. Sickness is always around. There's all type of epidemics. And these are slow processes. But this tsunami, this earthquake that happened in a matter of seconds with almost no warning whatsoever and with such terrifying and ferocious energy and right during our lifetimes before our eyes and went from one end of the world to the other in a matter of hours and devastated entire communities, villages, cities, and whatnot. This is certainly something to take notice of. Like states, it one of the most costly natural disasters, certainly in our times. So therefore, it doesn't need uniqueness, but it does have. And certainly it's something that we must take notice of. Excuse me. Now comes the question, okay, we must give thought to it. So why did it happen? This is the question everybody asks, so why? And naturally, in our culture, where everybody wants quick fixes, so they want quick answers. This is a question you cannot answer quickly. It's not a question you cannot answer without great wisdom and great thought. And it's something which needs great meditation. Unless you're a Nevi'im, unless you're a Novi. We don't have Nevi'im today. So I don't think anyone is capable of telling us exactly why did it happen at that time, at that place, and to those people? I'm not saying there's not a lot we can learn from it, but to give these answers, this we would need our Nevi'im. We could simply say an answer, like some want to, and it was mentioned in the article which I read, because of their many sins, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wiped them out. This is a very superficial answer without wisdom. Because besides the fact that the question is asked right there, that actually the Atache that was hit hardest than everybody else seemed to have the less amount of sins in the whole area. But besides all of that, then we're going to have a lot of questions to ask on that. We'll have a lot of questions on that. If we say every time a tragic thing happens, something tragic happens to a person is because of his many sins, what do we say about the Asura Haruge Malchus, the 10 great sages that were killed by the Romans and others? What do we say about Rabbi Akiva that was tortured to death? What do we say about the Churbones, the devastations of our Beis HaMikdash, our great Golus, the pogroms, the inquisitions, the expulsions, the holocausts, where we had Chasidei Elyon, Tzadikim Gemorim, Yeshorim, great, great sages, great, great righteous people swept away? So it's an answer that is an answer without wisdom. As I said, the answer is for us to probe, for us to labor in, to see what we can learn from it and how it can give us more knowledge of Hashem and improve our ways. But there are things we can learn. Something very unique that we can learn from here is if we would describe this day that it took place, it would be described as the day the waters came out of the sea. And that is a very haunting description. The days the waters came out of the sea. Because if we look at the creation of the world, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the very second pasuk states, "Va'aretz ha'isasahu va'vohu v'choshech al pnei sohom v'ruach elokim arachefes al pnei amoyim." The land was null, was void, empty, dark, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's spirit hovered over the waters. And the Chazal tell us, Rashi brings it in pasuk tes, Shtuchin hoyu al pnei kol ha'aretz. The waters at the beginning of creation spread over the entire earth. In pasuk tes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Vayom Elokim yikovu amayim mitachas hashamayim al mokom echad v'seiroe hayabosho. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, let the waters gather up from beneath the heavens to one place in order there should be dry land. Vayhi chein. And this is what the waters did. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu called the dry land earth, and the waters he called the sea. In Tehillim, in the Kapitel Borchi Nafshi, Kuf Dalet, Posuk Zayin Ches and Tes, David HaMelech writes as follows, Min Garoscho Yenusun, Min Kol Ramcho Yechapezun. From your shouts, the waters fled back. From your great voice, the waters retreated. Yalu horim yerdu bekos al makom ze yosadet olehem. Where did the waters retreat to? They went up to the mountains and they went into the valleys because this is what you made for them. Gvul samto bal yavorun. You made a gvul for them. You made boundaries for them. The boundaries were sand. In order that they shall no longer come to cover the earth. Now what does this all mean? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the waters covered everything. He told the waters, move back in order there can be dry land. The waters were not happy. They were not happy. They said, why should we move back? We have the run of the world. We're the strongest force in the world. Why should we move back? That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to shout at them. He shouted at them and said, move back. And he drew lines. And he says, the sand will be your gvulim, your limitations. You are not to come forward. And the watchers weren't happy. But they said, why? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, do you think I created the world for the waters? Do you think I created the world for fish? I created the world for Adam, for man. Therefore, move back in order there should be dry land, so man will have a place to live. It's because of that, the nature of the water always tries to come back to where it was before. If you'll ever go to the seaside, you'll see the waters attack the shore. They want to come back to where they were. But they'll come to a certain place, then they stop. Migaroscho, that's from the shouting of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they have to go back. But they're never satisfied. Because that malchus, that kingship, was taken away from them to make place for another king, the Chazal tell us, and that was man. To go get a little more depth than this, there's a Medrash Rabbah, where the Medrash says, in Reish Perek Hei, in Bereishis, Rebrachi b'shem Rababa Bam Yoma. Rababa Babun b'shem Rav Levi Omar. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yikov LeYamai. Ma Shani Yosi Lasi. Moshe LeMelech Shebonu Paltin VeHeishi V'Secha Ilomim. This is a parable. Is a you had a king, and that he built a palace, and he put into the palace people that were mute. V'Yemashkimim V'Sholim B'Shleima Shel Melech B'Remiza B'Etzpa U'Begulin. And every time the king went by, they would wave and they would make all kind of signs to praise the king. Omar HaMelech Iloya Pikochi Nalachas Kama V'Kama. He said, they're mute. How can they praise me? If they would be wise, how much more they would praise me? Hoshiva Bo HaMelech Diyarin Pikochim. So he moved away the mute people, moved them out, and he brought in wise people. Clever people, and they praised him more. But one day, Omdu v'iksiku bepalten. One day, they rebelled against the king, and Omru ein palten zushel melech shalonuhu. And they said, "This castle doesn't belong to the king. This is ours. This medina doesn't belong to the king. This is ours." What did the king do? He said, "Get them out of here, and bring back the mute people." Kach mitchilas briyose shel eilam lohoya kilusei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu eile ela min amayim. From the beginning of the creation of the world, the only ones that praise the Almighty, the greatest praises to the Almighty, was the water. As it states, Mikelis mayim rabim adirim mishbere yom, maho emrim adir bamarom Hashem. The great and the mighty water sang out. What did they sing out? Adir b'marom Hashem, how great is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, if these can praise me so well, how much more so can a human being praise me? So he created the human being. Came the generation of Noach, and they took the world away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They took the castle away. Came the generation of Enosh, again they did that. Came the Dor HaFloga, again they did that. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he said, I've had enough. He says, get rid of the human beings, and he told the waters, you can come back. And that's why he destroyed those generations with water. The Maral goes into this a little deeper. And he says that actually, he says, everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in nature doesn't have a physical barrier. For example, air will go wherever. Fire will go wherever. There's no places where fire is not allowed to go. It'll go wherever if you let it. Light will go all over. There's no places that light is off bounds. Why is it? Is water, the sea, has its boundaries. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to limit it because of what we're saying. Then he says there's a contrast, there's a tremendous contrast between the nature of water and the nature of man. He says the nature of man is the most complex creation to the point where it's already B'Tselem Elohim. It's in the image of the Almighty. The nature of water is the most simplest of physical creations, of a creation that has some mass in it. It's the most simplest. And can't even hold itself together. That's why whatever type of vessel you put it in, it'll take shape to that. So that finally brought satisfaction to the waters. They said, for that type of man, we have to step back. And the mayor stated that when Klal Yisrael went across the Red Sea and the seas moved aside, he said, that wasn't such a great phenomena. Why was that such a great phenomena? They said, what do you mean? Did you ever see a sea move aside? He said, La'odam yechidi le'edosh shlema le'kolshkein. The waters moved aside for the creation of man. So for Klal Yisrael, when they were going to receive the Torah, how much more so? HaKadosh Baruch Hu moved the oceans away for the creation of man. So certainly he would move the Red Sea away for Yisrael that was going to the perfection of the creation of man. But the water said, we will move aside. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed. We will move aside for someone who's greater than us. But not for someone who's not greater than us. And in the generations of Noach and others, they said, this wasn't the agreement. Man has fallen. He's not greater than us anymore. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the great floods. It's interesting, the Maral says the waters have the nature where they can totally eradicate man, where he becomes totally irrecognizable that he was a man. Makes man almost into like the water. And therefore, in all of the generations, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised never to bring a flood against the entire world, but in all of the later generations, there was always this conflict. It's very interesting that this was the day that the waters came out of the sea, over the boundaries, kilometers into the dry land. What happened? Now there's another Mishnah. There's a Mishnah in the Sechta Oves, where the Mishnah states in Masechta Oveis, this is in Perek Hei, Posuk Mishnah Ches, Shiva Mini Peronies Boin La'Olam, Al Shiva Gufei Aveira. There are seven types of tragedies that come to the world because of seven Aveiras that Klal Yisrael commit. And the Mishnah goes into detail. We're not going to go into detail as to which Aveiras bring which, but what are the seven different type of tragedies that come? It brings, firstly, famine, in which there's a great inflation, which creates poverty to many people. The second is, that's Rav Shel Betzores. The second is Rav Shel Mahuma Vishel Betzores. A greater famine comes to the world, which brings poverty to most of the world. The third is a Rav Shel Kliya, a famine which is devastating, which is annihilating. The fourth is Dever. Dever is a plague. The fifth is Cherev, a sword. Six is And then there's Chayaro. The Chayaro, wild animals, and the seventh is Golus, exile. These are the seven plagues. The Maral says, what do we learn from that Mishnah? We learn a few straight, simple principles. They're not simple, but straight principles. Firstly, we learn that tragedies don't come to the world because of scientific phenomena. HaKadosh Baruch Hu works through the scientific phenomena. Even when he brought the plagues on Mitzrayim, they were all done physically. Even when he split the Red Sea, he didn't have the sea just split by itself. He brought a strong western wind that blew all night to blow the waters aside. And then he brought the wind, the other wind, to blow, let it fall back with the locusts and so forth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu works through the nature. But that's not the cause. The cause is he. When and where and what. So firstly we see tragedies come to the world because of the acts of men. Secondly, we're seeing tragedies coming to the world because of the acts of Israel. But thirdly, he said, why seven? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 7 days, and he gave the world seven boundaries. Just like you'll have physical boundaries, he gave it spiritual boundaries. Seven spiritual boundaries. And these are based on the seven mitzvahs that he gave to man. All men were given seven mitzvahs. And this that Yisrael has, Taryag 613, these are outgrowths. Further, higher levels from the seven mitzvahs. Okay, good. But it's interesting to note that water is not brought there. Floods are not mentioned in that mission of the seven tragedies. And according to what we're saying, is because all of those tragedies come because of a particular Avera. But the Mabul, the waters, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said will come when man is no longer at the level where he has a supremacy over the waters, where he can reign over the waters. In other words, where there's a general falling of man, then the waters will come. Perhaps this is an insight that we can learn from this particular tragedy. It was a day when the waters came out of the sea. They went over their boundaries. Maybe this is a signal to man that we have fallen. And we have not fallen in limited areas, but the whole Shir Kema, the whole height of man, is no longer what it should be. And we don't have to look far and wide to substantiate that man has fallen in every area of human endeavor. Corruption, dishonesty, immorality, whatever there is, kfira, has crept into the point where you have to look far and wide to look for something good left in man. The fact is, when there's something good done, it makes the newspapers. It's a chidush. That's news. Well, it should be the opposite. The whole level of civilized man has fallen to the point where the waters are starting to rise. And they had somewhat of an ability to return to the majesty that they had before. So perhaps this is something that we can give thought to. But let me finalize by saying that when we speak about this, we must not say, well, we know there's plenty of nations of the world that have sunk into the depths of who knows what, and they have to lift up their ways. Now, that's not what the prophet says. The prophet points the finger at Israel, not at the nations of the world. Because Israel is the lave, the heart of the world. And if the heart is not right, nothing is right. The doctors will always tell you, let's get the heart right. And then we'll worry about everything else. And when we speak about Israel, there's also the tendency that those who are from the Shomrei Torah and Mitzvahs will say, yes, there's a lot wrong with Israel. Look at all of the people that don't keep Shabbos, and look at all the people that don't keep Kashrus, and look at all of that. That also is not the way. Because it's those that are supposed to be the righteous of Israel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu points the fingers at. At atfosa de dora. The Gemara brings, why do we see consistently that tragedies happen to the great ones of Israel? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if everything was right by you, it would be right by others also. You are the leaders of the generations. You are the heart of the nation. So, to say, look at them, no. We have to look at ourselves. I was just listening to a tape from my Rebbe Rav Gifter. It was where he gave a talk, a drosha, in 1983. I believe it was 1983, 1982, at the Siyum HaShas of the Daf Yomi in Madison Square Garden. And he spoke of this. He says he doesn't like this idea that all of those so-called Shomrei Torah and Mitzvahs, they point at the others. He says, let them point at themselves, not at the others. If everything was right by them, then the others would learn from it. Klal Yisrael is supposed to be the model for the world. The world is supposed to learn from us. And those that know better than the others are supposed to be the model for the others, that the others will want to learn from them. And he gives a whole schmooze on Kiddush Hashem. He says, what is Kiddush Hashem? He says, look in the Rambam, you'll see what Kiddush Hashem is. He says, Kiddush Hashem is being a mensch. Being a person where of integrity, of kindness, of me'ura ben abriyas, mixing with others, where others want to emulate you. And then he says, now people are very involved in what they call kiruv rechekim, bring close those who are far away. He said, I would like to know, 3 times a day, there's a bracha in the Shemini Esrei, in which we say, Hashiveinu avinu l'seirasecho, v'korveinu malkeinu l'avreisecho. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring us back to his Torah, and our King should bring us back to his service. He says, who was that bracha for? He says, for the Rechekim, for those who are far away. They don't even know that bracha. So who was that bracha made for? He said it was made for the craving. It was made for those who are close. He says the Chofetz Chaim said that bracha. Rabbi Gamliel said that bracha. Everyone said that bracha. He says our job is not to make others from. Our job is to make ourselves from. Don't worry so much about the others, he said. Worry about yourselves. Are we free of Lashon Hara? Are we such great Bali Chesed and Bali Tzedaka? Do we daven so well? Are we so great in Torah? Work on being makarev the craving yourselves. And then you'll have an influence on the rechaikim, on those who are farther away. And this is what we're talking about. This is what the Novi said. Don't say this is happening over there. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, learn from it. And if we do, that'll have great influence on everyone else. Bein be Yisrael and Bein be Amim. These are some of the thoughts that we can learn from this great phenomenon and this tragic phenomenon that took place during our lifetimes just recently. Thank you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.